This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 130. Tom, good evening. We're recording in an evening today, tonight, this evening.
Isn't this a bit fancy and different?
Yeah, we're trying to be late night people. By late night, I mean not even 5:30.
Well, these are my hours. There may be a different Tom out this evening. Apologies in advance, everyone.
The reason we're doing a little bit later is because we've got Katie and Otie from For Your Reference Podcast. How are you guys going?
We're doing great.
Good.
I don't think people should let us out after hours, but here we are.
Do you like how this is super late for me, but not at all for Tom?
I know. We normally record what is a breakfast radio show for me at 11 o'clock in the morning. I stay up late. I go to bed at about 3 or 4 in the morning. So this is peak time. Let's do this. Have you been in lockdown as well? I mean, clearly everyone's in lockdown, but like, are you out for work or anything, or are you at home?
Yeah, so we are both in IT and we are both working from home. So a bit of a call center sort of situation we've got at the moment. So definitely a lot of interesting sort of calls we're getting.
Nice. Scale of 1 to 10. 1 being pretty normal and 10 being, I now have Tiger King hair. how mad are you going?
I guess the best way to say it is there are some things that you should bring to your own job. There are some things that IT just can't do for you, friends and lovers. You know, you need to know how to reboot a computer, for example.
So is the first question always, have you turned it on and off yet?
Exactly. And then I usually disappear if that doesn't work.
I'm out of ideas.
How often does that actually fix the problem?
It's usually VPNs that are the problem at the moment.
Sure.
Everyone's like, I've tried everything. Everything is working perfectly fine. Have you tried the VPN? That's kind of a big problem.
Just writing that one down for myself. That's a good tip. But you, look, we did mention that you guys have a podcast. Tell us what For Your Reference Podcast is all about.
So all of our episodes encapsulate one particular movie series or one particular TV show. You know, a lot of the time, super intrinsic, maybe people you should stay away from speak in tongues. We speak in references, but we'll try to behave today.
I think we all know people like that.
That you stay away from, right?
Yeah.
you find out what their favorite movies and TV shows are and then just assume what they're saying is from like 30 Rock or Seinfeld or something like that.
Yeah, that's usually like The Office is usually my go-to because everyone watches The Office. But if people like Archer, I know we're going to be best friends.
Yeah, right. Nice pick. So how long have you guys been doing it for? It's been over a year, yeah?
Yeah, so we started in February of 2019. What are numbers? What are years? What are months anymore? But yeah, it was before the Oscars of last year.
That was the Green Book, right?
The Green Book and yeah, definitely.
That's my 2019 Oscar reference.
What a weird pull. That's your thing that happened in 2019. Green Book won Best Oscar. Contentious.
We actually recorded an episode of Green Book and we were very young in podcasting. So I guess, you know, as time goes on, you know how you can tackle more social commentary and more deeper sort of sinkier sort of topics. But the pod gods decided it was too early for us and we lost that recording, maybe for the best of everyone.
That and the fact that we didn't agree on anything.
Oh, yeah. Which is always.
Green Book is a bit of a running joke. Well, not a joke, but a regular guest of the show, Nabil, is kind of obsessed with that movie in a very good way. But if you give him a chance, he'll take over and talk for 15 to 18 minutes about Green Book.
And they'll always be different. He'll always have a different argument and aspects that he wants to, like, talk about. It's incredible. Yeah.
He's very passionate about that film.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Self-isolation has been a time where all of us have collectively and individually stopped what we're doing and changed our everyday lives. Going to a concert, eating at a packed restaurant, playing team sports, attending a destination wedding of a school friend who you haven't seen or spoken to for years, and spending a fortune on a dress, flights, accommodation, and a pair of $250 copper tongs because they were the last thing left on the gift registry. All of these things are remnants of the past. In Diaries of a Breadmaker, we sit down with Rebecca to find out what she's fallen in love with during these unprecedented times.
We need new activities that will drive our happiness, creativity, and addictions. Mine is sourdough bread making. Like, since I started my starter, I've been obsessed. I've made loaves, buns, rolls, breadsticks, pizza bases, bread cereal. I've actually made bread cereal, which isn't even a thing, so I view myself as a bit of an innovator. I dream about it. It's like the last thing I think about before I go to sleep and the first thing I think about every morning when I wake up. As of right now, I've posted 2,774 photos of my baking on all of my social media. That'll go up though because I've just shot a series of Vegemite on sourdough toast photos. They were cut up into soldiers and I displayed them in flower vases. They should do really well on Instagram. What I've learnt during our lockdown is that I have a talent and drive. I want to be a baker now. But I want to set my own hours. I am not getting up at 2 a.m.
Diaries of a Breadmaker, streaming now.
Hey, do you want to crack into the news?
All right. So it's news is becoming more and more scarce and we've got to go fossicking for the gold. So there's only really one announcement of a show coming back that I was like, oh, awesome. So Doom Patrol Season 2 is coming out June 25th. That's on the DC Universe app in the States. I think it's also going to be on HBO Now or HBO Go or whatever the...
Or Max.
That's the one.
They've got so many different ones. So it's going to be on all of those. I'm not sure when it will come to Australia exactly, but they didn't muck around with getting it on Foxtel for season one. And that was kind of one of my surprise standout hits of last year. I thought it would be kind of good going in and it was bonkers. If you enjoy the Umbrella Academy and you can't wait for season two of that, Doom Patrol season two is going to tide you over really, really well. And you might actually just kind of realize that Umbrella Academy is a very good intentioned ripoff of the Doom Patrol.
Fighting words.
Wow.
The guy, Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance, the creator of Umbrella Academy, has admitted that he loves Doom Patrol and it was a big inspiration on the book. So much so that he now writes the Doom Patrol comic book. So it's kind of gone full circle for him, very much involved in that world.
Is that then fan fiction? I think it is, right?
It's weirdly fan fiction that became canon. Hmm. It's just a real deal. Anyway, he's come up with some pretty bonkers stuff. If you've ever wanted to see what a sentient town that can move itself around is like, communicates with billboards and neon signs to people and stuff like that. Like, that's pretty much, if you were going to be an X-Man, that's the worst power. His name is Danny the Street.
He's not even.
It's like a,
didn't have the
he
right
looks
title.
Like a 1950s street, like proper Americana with an old school theater and this sort of stuff on there. And he can go into hiding and blink out of our universe. This show is so weird.
I mean, that would be quite handy. You were talking about Umbrella Academy. They have announced that Series 2 is coming out 31st of July, I think.
That's good news.
It is good news. They did a isolation video sort of advertising it and they threw it up on, well, socials. I saw it on Twitter. It was probably everywhere else and they were all dancing. And the boy, who's the boy? I can't remember their names anymore because it was a year ago.
Five.
Yeah. He's had a bit of a puberty hit, so he's looking a bit older and probably a little bit taller. So it'll be interesting to see how he is.
It's going to be interesting to see how they play that out because his character is meant to be like a 55-year-old man stuck in that body.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess now it's just that his brain is stuck in a body so the body can age. And that's okay. Anyway.
I don't want to give too much away about the season finale of the first season, but
no,
there are questions.
Let's
leave it.
The show that knows more than Jon Snow. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Let's talk about Elvis Presley.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. So Graceland is reopening, which is super exciting for people who are big fans of Elvis Presley. They always have like this big celebration on the 16th of August, I think it is. That's the anniversary of his death, which is also Madonna's birthday. So a lot of people like to go and hang out at Graceland and dress up as him or whatever. They will be able to do that, but only 25% of the normal capacity will be able to, and there'll be lots of sanitizer, face masks, all that sort of stuff. Now, is anybody scrambling to go to Graceland this far into the pandemic? Anybody? Anybody here?
In Australia, no, but in America, people are going to flock to that because it's allowed.
Is it in a state that's allowed at the moment?
So what's, is it Memphis? So
it's not till August. So you would hope that things might be opened up by then.
Also, Leah, I love how tentative you were about the 16th of August.
Yeah.
As if you didn't know.
Think about that. Numbers are difficult. So Graceland usually gets about 500,000 to 750,000 people every year.
Wow.
So you can do the maths, and 25% of that is not much. So they're taking everybody's taking a cut of their normal revenue. But there's no way, there's no way we would be able to get there anyway within a year. We're in the New Zealand bubble. We can only go to New Zealand.
Did you see there was an article from the guy that runs Hobbiton, and he's like, we can't get a good grant. And they're saying we have to pivot and try different business. We can't have mini golf here. It's Hobbit Town. He made a very good point, very, very brashly.
Have you guys been to Hobbit Town?
Not yet.
I haven't either.
That's the right answer. Not yet.
We need someone to sponsor our trip there. We should all go.
That's now that we can't go proper overseas, once New Zealand opens
proper?
Up, it's, you know what I
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, I know.
What? A real trip. New Zealand, it's like going to Tasmania. Places over there are going to be a lot more appealing for Australians. And so I reckon they need to get Hobbiton ready. They need to get the birthplace of Dave Dobbin. I want to, you know, slice of heaven.
Yep.
We'll go and see where Foot Rock Flats was drawn.
Classic. Have a look at the desk. It could be a desk museum. And like some of the drawings are still on there.
We could go and see Crowded House's birthplace, but only in a non-crowded environment.
The unofficial non-crowded.
Now, that's a catchphrase. What else have you got, Tom?
I saw a cool ad from Walgreens, of all places, which is not a thing we have in Australia, but they are a chain in the States.
Is it like a chemist sort of thing?
I think it's more like a supermarket. I think it's a big chain supermarket.
So not like a Walmart? That's different?
I don't know if it's quite. So Walmart is like, well, Costco's the biggest. And then I think Walmart is maybe like the equivalent of Kmart and Big W here.
I think it also sells groceries.
Yes. I think that's why I'm like, I don't know what it does. Anyway, they've got a new ad that most ads that are coming out at the moment are either due to the effects of COVID-19 or like very serious, or it's a bank going, we're all in this together. Look at we're using Zoom too. Ha ha, we're real people too. These guys instead have gone, hey, if you've got to do curbside drop-off, whatever car you're in works for us. And so they've licensed the rights for all these amazing cars from movie history to be in this ad. So like a DeLorean flies in and the Jurassic Park Jeep. And I don't know how they got the permission to use all this stuff, because I don't like a lot of Universal. At one point, Bumblebee runs in, jumps over the camera, transforms, and turns into the car.
It's just because.
Exactly. Pops the hood and someone puts in groceries.
Well, unless Van Damme was there with a semi trailer, I don't think I would be impressed, to be honest.
Wouldn't that be good? That would be a very clear way to show proper physical distancing.
Yeah.
You need to be one Van Damme apart.
Which is not that far, because he's not a very tall man.
That is from the Watchers podcast, not the From For Your Reference podcast.
A Van Damme split apart.
He's short. I'm sure he is. I think he's like Tom Cruise short.
He's not that short.
I'm going to look it up.
I think he's 5'10", somewhere
really?
In there. Yeah.
I don't know how to spell his name.
Just put some letters in. I'm sure we'll figure it out.
He was the Predator originally, and then he was like, nah, this
yeah,
sucks.
He was too. That's right.
It would suck being that suit.
Well, it's kind of like The Mandalorian with Pedro Pascal. Like, that's why you tune in. That's why I tuned in for the first episode. I wanted to see that gorgeous face. You catfished me.
Did you wait it's till the end?
Him. It's not him in the suit.
Yeah, I know.
How messed up's that?
More messed up than any sort of Disney.
Oh, wait, did I miss a trick? It's not him in the suit?
No. Well, there are three people that play The Mandalorian.
Oh, no, that's just cheating.
There's a guy that does like the martial arts kind of thing.
The stunts. There's a guy that does the stunts and then a guy that does the fighting.
Yeah. It's all in The Mandalorian doco on Disney Plus. Pretty interesting, actually.
Oh. Yeah.
It was interesting. Yeah. Obviously, you know how some shows, well, a lot of programs over in the US will have different directors for each episode, even like Game of Thrones had it. But all of these directors were often still on set when the other directors were directing it. So it was really sort of collaborative. It was really interesting. That was the first episode that they were talking about that. Later on, there's not many episodes, maybe four or five. I can't remember. But later on, the shell shock moment where you find out that there are three Mandalorians. But if you are going to watch the rest of the season, Katie, I would say you might be surprised and happy.
Well, if I don't get to see his face, it's not a happy time. It's pivotal on seeing his face. That's where the crescendo happens, Leah.
it's going to happen because that's part of the Mandalorian culture is you don't remove your mask. And as soon as you say that phrase, that means at some point in the story, that mask has to come off. So it's the
only thing I think about. Yeah, just keep watching.
Maybe there's a new way of coining. It will no longer be jumping the shark. It will be removing your Mandalorian helmet.
Pulling a Mando.
Mando Commando.
Oh, I like that. That's the catchphrase right there.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Now, you guys saw that the Scream reboot is going to happen. And David Arquette he's in.
Mm.
He's signed.
So has he been cast? Or
he's
has
been
David
cast.
Put his hand up.
Oh. Yeah.
Because I can see both being a firm possibility.
It's a whole I'd lot go of- with him putting his hand up.
It's an important technicality, I guess.
I don't understand how Officer Dewey is still alive at the end of four of those films.
You know what? I only remember the first one. I've seen the others. I have no recollection as to what happens in any of them.
All right. First one is, you can't even list them off what they are because that spoils each one.
Mm.
The second one has Buffy. The third one has Kevin Smith and Mark Hamill.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah. And the fourth one was pretty darn forgettable.
Right.
But the sad thing is, I think what takes away from the emotional sort of payoff of anything we watch is everything is free market. Like, things can be rebooted, things can be, remade. So it kind of takes away from any sort of emotional depths or any sort of closure that you might get from something, right?
I completely agree. There's some very special shows. There's a few movies, but some special shows that I think they'll never try and remake.
Princess Bride.
Well, there you go. That is a perfect film. I don't ever need to see them redo that. It's emotionally sufficient forever. It doesn't need better effects or anything like that. Faulty Towers is another one I would put in that category.
Yeah.
They will never attempt to redo that because that show is perfect. Mm. And those characters, I'm happy with their growth or lack of.
Tom, you said a very important thing. They don't need to. But they might. Isn't there a Scarface or something sort of reboot in the works as well? I'm sure arguably people don't need a reboot of that, but it will probably happen.
Oh, we don't need another reboot of Scarface.
No.
No, we don't. But anyone that has ever purchased an Ed Hardy shirt will probably go and see that film. You know what I mean? we don't need that. It's a great film, but there will be a small pocket of people that think that movie's great. Oh my God. And there'll be teenagers that see that one first and think it's the better one.
You know what I'm already sad about? When they do remake Scarface, they're obviously not going to have the same soundtrack. They're going to have a whole heap of new music. And that soundtrack is just, when I think of Scarface, that's the first thing I actually think about. I think of the songs. They were so part of the movie itself.
Is it going to be Pitbull?
I am partial to a Pitbull, may I say.
I love Mr. 305, Worldwide Entertainment. Yes, please. He's great.
I'll take another slice, Tom.
Scarface with Pitbull music. Maybe I'm coming around to this. Maybe James Franco can be in it like he was in Spring Breakers with the grills and the cornrows.
Did you audibly convince yourself? Right?
I think I've come. Like, if this comes at a weird angle, and maybe instead of coke, I don't know. It's got to be a different drug. It's got to be some sort of designer hip drug that the children are into now.
Out of a vape pen or something?
Yes.
Yes. I don't know. Fortnite has to play in somehow.
Oh, what, flossing?
Yes. And he can have the gun that he shoots people with. Maybe it's one of those Fortnite nerfs instead.
Maybe they could, instead of releasing and premiering the movie, the Scarface movie in theatres, they can just play it in Fortnite. So everybody who wants to go and see it has to go into Fortnite to watch it.
Ooh. Oh, look, if we're talking immersive experience, imagine if they did, what was the name of that Netflix Black Mirror?
Bandersnatch.
Yeah, imagine if they did a Bandersnatch but Scarface and you got to choose. Are you reloaded?
You know what messed me up about Bandersnatch was Charlie Brooker actually admitted that there was no happy ending to Bandersnatch. Sorry, I don't know if that's a spoiler, but that messed me up because I was really trying to win. But it gave me a real life lesson of how terrible life is.
How many times did you go back to certain pivotal moments and make the other decision?
I think we're breaking up. I can't hear you right now.
I'm glitching
like Bandersnatch.
Yeah, there was one bit that I kept going back to see if I could change. I won't say what it is, to see if I could change something. Yeah. And then I realized that was just the storyline and I wasn't going to be able to fix that issue.
I think I've weirdly convinced myself that I want to do a Choose Your Own Adventure Scarface with music provided by Pitbull.
Okay.
But can you unsee Al Pacino as Tony Montana? I don't think I can. Not in this lifetime, at least.
Yeah.
Who would they cast now? They probably, like, maybe Miles Teller.
Oh. Where has he been?
the drummer kid.
Yeah, but there was literally just a Family Guy reference about where has he been these past couple of years.
He's stuck doing Fantastic Four for a while, and he's big in Top Gun 2, but that's been pushed back and back and back. And
I forgot about that.
Poor guy. I could see him because he seems very game for it. The other one maybe is Nicholas Holt.
Yeah.
Is Chris Messina good? Is he not? Is he too old? Because I think he's got the machismo that's required.
If you were going against type, who would you put?
Oh, to annoy someone, you'd find a lady.
Oh. Go on the James Bond route
and watch the internet explode.
That's real good. Who are you thinking? I mean, if you want to make it implode, it's got to be what's her name, Brie Larson, right?
Oh wow.
They would hate that. You need someone outspoken. Like, so she, you know, she likes to do a little bit of stuff on social media. But what about someone so inappropriate? Like someone like Roseanne Barr.
Oh, wow.
McLovin. The kid from Superbad.
That's not bad.
Well, he was in Kick-Ass. He was wanted to be that character. Let's push him through and see him go full cokehead.
Just give him a burl.
Their plastic surgeon doesn't want them doing any activity where balls fly at their nose. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
We've got another thing that's getting, it's not getting remade. It's having another sequel, Legally Blonde 3. Mindy Kaling and Dan Gora are actually writing the script now, which is pretty cool.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you got Katie at Mindy Kaling.
Yeah, you had me at Mindy.
Same. I think when I saw this article, hasn't this already been news before? And apparently they had gotten other people to write a script a couple of years ago, and then obviously they didn't like it because Mindy and Dan are scrapping it. They're doing their own, like, proper script.
Well, it might be that because they were trying to readapt, if that's a word, Legally Blonde, the musical.
Right.
I think that was the original plan because that's been doing so well on Broadway for many years and toured everywhere and sort of stuff. I think they were going to do a film version of that, and that might still happen. But then there's Legally Blonde 3 as well. I hope they call it like Legally Blonde 3 Back in the Saddle or...
Reloaded?
It's going to have Reese back again. I don't think you could have a Legally Blonde without her.
She's such a busy woman. The American, the Morning Wars, I think it's called Morning Show in America, but it's Morning Wars in Australia. She's also done Little Fires Everywhere, Big Little Lies. Like, where does she have time?
It's her production company. She just wants to keep. And also
I think
the fact that she's got that production company means she can keep acting because she is a woman of a certain age in Hollywood. Like, she looks amazing, but she was America's sweetheart for many, many years, and people like Meg Ryan were as well before her. And I know Meg did stuff to her face and that kind of was a bit, can I say it? She looks like Joker.
She did stuff to Dennis Quaid's heart, and so she's dead to me.
And potentially Hollywood. But, yeah, so Reese has kept herself extremely relevant. And a lot of the stuff that she's doing is always getting awards or at least being nominated. So the fact that she's going back to doing something that she's so famous for doing, I'm really excited.
What do you think, Snowball, what are some story ideas it could be? Is she training someone? Is she Jennifer Coolidge now to someone else to give advice?
Please tell me Jennifer Coolidge is going to be back.
Yeah, she has to be.
I think that's the balance when you have remakes or sequels, is you want to appease the existing audience, but you also need to bring people in, ergo Pitbull, into the franchise as well.
Well, I think it's better than them, like, they could do a prequel and call it, like, Barely Legally Blonde. See what I mean? I think
there's a whole movement around that, Tom.
But they've moved in a better protection. You're telling me that a Disney movie about a 14-year-old genius girl who passes the bar, like, imagine Doogie Howser, but a 14-year-old precocious girl. That movie's going to kick ass.
Once you stuck Disney's name in there, it suddenly got a lot cleaner and more doable.
I wasn't thinking that.
I know, but it's hard to not just...
The only program dumb enough to cross the streams. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
The Lego Masters finale happened last night. I know you haven't watched it yet, so we won't go into any detail, but it was great.
Did you guys watch any of the Lego Masters?
No, is it kind of like Zumbo, but you don't eat it?
No, it's like Great British Bake Off, but with Lego. It's all real positive. It's people congratulating each other, and they do Lego building challenges, and at the end someone wins $100,000.
Oh, that's nice. I think a part of my repression is I wasn't allowed to have Legos, so I don't want to watch people having fun with Legos.
Okay,
Lego.
We need to unpack this. What were the reasons given for not allowing you to have Lego?
Because there were sticks outside I could play with.
Okay. I mean, it's true. Were you allowed to bring said sticks inside and play with them and leave them on the floor so your parents could step on them with their bare feet?
No, there were outside sticks. Like, you have an outside cat, you have an inside cat. This is getting very Joe Swanson from Family Guy.
So I missed the final. So will I be happy with who won?
I think so. It's this. I don't think it was any great upset for some people. It depends on who you're championing. One of them is the biggest build that's ever been on the show, and it's like, wow, big. And it genuinely, like, if you ever went to any of the old, like when they used to do the Lego shows at shopping centers, where you go and they'd have a life-size rhino and a zebra and people and stuff like that. There's one of the teams did something that took me back to that. Very, very cool. And then another team did a very creative monster-based thing, but it went a completely different direction to what they originally thought. It was a really good, it was a great season. I liked this season more than season one.
Why?
And I like the Australian format better than the American one, because the American one is a little more serious and slick. And the Australian one, hosted by Hamish Blake, reminds itself about every 10 minutes that this is a show about Lego. It's a thing generally for children, but this is amazing artwork made by adults and stuff like that. In these times when everything's confusing and where, you know, it's nice to watch a show that's very gentle and people being creative and just celebrating creativity.
Yeah.
It also is weirdly very much from, you could tell that they filmed it earlier this year because people are hugging all the time. And in the finale, 250 people come into the room to help judge and this sort of stuff. And you're just, oh, okay, this is definitely not live in any way.
I cannot remember, Tom, if we spoke about this on the podcast or if we just spoke about it in general, but you could totally social distance filming another season of Lego Masters.
Yeah, even in the setup they've got there at the moment, everyone's more than a meter and a half apart.
Yeah. It's doable. They're, so we may get
They've been doing auditions for season three already.
Oh, cool. Getting
contestants.
Well, they're looking happy then. Anything else?
No, get out of my news hut.
Whoa, that sounds so serious. Let's get into some watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I've watched a lot of stuff that I've finished, and I think we should probably talk about one that finished the end of last week. It was on Sunday for Americans. The Last Dance. Now, you guys watched that as well, yeah?
Yes, we are 8 episodes deep.
Now, I know that, Katie, you and I are not huge basketball fans, but still found it captivating enough to want to continue watching. But we had a problem.
Yes. Going back and forth in regards to the timeline, it was very Cloud Atlas. There's no spoiler there, but it was very Cloud Atlas. So they would all be in the same time frame, but very early in the series, it's about the man, the myth, and the legend. Deservedly so. But then later on in episodes, you would have commentary about how he's a bully. But it's all happening at the same time. So it felt all a bit disjointed in the way they presented, especially because I didn't understand the timing of everything. So I didn't know where and when Dennis Rodman existed. I didn't know when Scottie Pippen existed. So it was hard to try and catch up with all of the details if you're not a full-on fan.
I think the most important thing with The Last Dance is knowing exactly when Scottie and Rodman joined the Bulls. Mm-hmm. And once you have that down, then the timeline shift would make most sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd just be wondering, they're complaining they're not winning the championship or they don't have the cast, then why are they winning? Once you have that down, then I think it'll just make perfect sense.
It was an interesting editing style, though, to jump like that. Because if you were, not watching the screen the time when they flashed the date of the year,
yeah,
it was really difficult. I mean, it was easier when he had hair and when he didn't have hair. They were two moments where you're like, okay, I can tell these are two different times. But he spent a fair bit of his career, you know, with the iconic bald head. So it was really difficult to figure out what was going on. Has it made you want? I mean, not that you can, but has it made you, Katie, want to sit down and watch more NBA or just basketball games in general? Or was it the story you were more interested in?
I appreciate the question. Thank you for the question. I am not really into sports. Even OT watches the Football League as well.
Premier Leagues, thank you very much.
If you're nasty, if you're nasty. No, not necessarily. It was because I grew up when Michael Jordan was already an icon. Like people had already lived peak Jordan. So I knew because people told me he was a legend. And I'm usually the sort of person, I will continue to research after a documentary, but the barrier of entry was quite high in understanding, you know, everything that he's going through. And I don't think it's a bad thing that he was kind of a terrible person to be around, because to be that great, to have that athletic sort of peak, you kind of want the best for yourself and also everyone else. I think from what I'm understanding in the documentary, he didn't realize that people couldn't get on his level. Like he was super astronomically not on the same level as everyone else.
He was... he was so iconic because of the fact that he was so not just incredibly talented, but so driven. You know, he would be the guy that, you know, training would finish and he would stay there. I mean, they showed when he was filming Space Jam, and every moment that he was not on set, he was practicing because have I got this right? He was coming back from baseball. So he was trying to get his arms back into basketball physique. Yeah. I can't remember. I think it was then. So he was really, really focused on trying to get, you know, back into peak physical condition for basketball. And he was so driven, and he would find, for example, if someone was to say, oh, you know, great game when they'd lost, he'd go, right, you're my enemy. Next time I play you, I'm going to win the game because I'm getting back at you. Like, so he would find all these reasons to beat people. Mm-hmm. And he would convince himself that, he wouldn't even convince. He would just be like, we're winning this game.
Yeah, sometimes he just make up reasons to spy himself.
Yeah.
And I think he just did great under pressure. But the interesting thing about the documentary as well is, you know, as much as it bothered me that it seemed a bit too sanitized in how great of a guy he was and he didn't really have any sort of shortcomings, I kind of had graces for that because of how intrusive the media was. Give this guy a break. Like, I don't remember which championship it was, but he had just won a championship and everyone was asking, what's next? Do you think you can keep this up? And it's like, this guy is a legend and we don't deserve him. What are you doing right
now? Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that there was, with The Last Dance, you know, people that whole year were asking him, is there going to be another year? Are you coming back after this? I mean, he knew that there were, what was his name? Jerry Krause? There were two Jerrys. I think the two Jerrys were in charge of
the manager.
Yeah. Like Michael and everybody, like Phil Jackson, everybody, they knew that there was 99.9% chance of the fact that they were all getting kicked out at the end of the season, whether they won or not. But they were still driven enough to want to win. But what I thought was interesting was that the media kept asking, is there another year? Is there another year? And these guys are so focused. Like Michael Jordan is so focused that he didn't let that come into his head. You know, like, I don't know, say you're playing football, like soccer football, and the goal is open. You've got the ball. You can go for the goal. And you're like, there's no one there. I'm going to kick it. And chances are you're going to miss it because you've psyched yourself out. That's not what he does. And I think that's what makes him different to the rest of us.
And he's like joking. He's pretty much, you know, one stunt short of a backflip. Like he is really enjoying the moment. He's not even really focusing because it just comes naturally, right?
And why were they all chewing gum whilst playing?
Thank you.
It's a stress thing. Anyone who's played sort of any competitive sports, like you need to keep yourself busy, to keep your mind busy, focused on something, and chewing just helps.
So if you played a game that required a mouth guard, you'd have to chew on that.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, I don't know if you need a center this, but I just want to point out that OT is wearing his Arsenal kit at the moment, and he's very passionate, and he always likes to talk about we. So I really feel like he was embodying the team when he said that. This was based off experience, delusional or not.
Look, you've got to be passionate about something, right? Now, Tom, you watched a bit of it, didn't you?
No, I watched the trailer because there's some Space Jam stuff, and then I watched the Space Jam clip, and I love Space Jam. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I don't know why. As an adult, I can identify it's not a good film. It's just an exercise in product placement, but it has a really special place in my heart. So I get exactly what you're saying. I'm not a huge sports fan either. That I don't have a huge connection, emotional connection and stuff like that. So I was kind of already tuning out by the end of the trailer.
Right.
But then when I got to see footage of him interacting with nothing on a green screen for what apparently was months on end, that I'm fascinated with, because that is an exercise in mental unraveling. That's what we're all going through now.
Yeah.
But and imagine 25 years ago, we don't have Zoom, we don't have internet connection, we don't have phones that can email or anything yet. He's just talking to himself in a green room.
Mm.
That's crazy.
It's literally an alien concept.
Very good.
Well done. I hate those Monstars. They're good villains.
Now, Tom, whilst we were watching that, what have you been watching?
So there's been a bunch of shows come back, which is good. And there's not as much scripted stuff out there. Like, we're not going to see a lot of the dramas and things. Their seasons are wrapping up. Obviously, Flash had their season earlier than expected this week. There was an ending. It was clearly not the ending they hoped for, but they can address it when they come back next year. But coming back, there were two shows that I didn't even realize were coming back, and I was so chuffed that they were. Both of them are on Viceland, or Vice, wherever you're in is what it'll be called.
Yep.
Fuck That's Delicious has come back for season 4.
Great
which
name.
Which is Action Bronson's tourism / food culinary review show. And then Most Expensivest.
Yeah, 2 Chainz.
And this week's episode saw 2 Chainz take his three daughters to this gigantic, like $38 million mansion. Just go and see what expensive life is like for rich people. So there were some kids from a beauty pageant that came out and showed off what a beauty pageant's like. It's only $10,000 to sign up for this pageant.
Oh, just only.
That's what I mean. We'll plan it that way. And I love that show so much because Chainz is so excited by all this stuff, and yet trying to play it cool all the time. The editor messes with him constantly, which is brilliant. But throwing his three kids into the mix and trying to see him still be 2 Chainz on camera, but he's clearly just daddy to them.
Yeah.
It was not working for him at all. So he's talking to camera and delivering his stuff like 2 Chainz and then having to snap. Heaven. I said, stop it, settle. back to the camera. This is some of the dopest gear I've ever ridden. So it was fantastic having them back. If you are missing The Good Place, like I certainly am, Misery Index Season 2 has come back, which is the four guys from Impractical Jokers and Tahani from Good Place, Jamila Al-Jamil, it's a fun show. It should be super negative. It's a game show based on rating what are the worst possible experiences that could have happened to you. Season 1 kicks off strong. One of them, a lady has to rate going for surgery, and when waking up, discovering that your doctor is not only a fake doctor with fake license, but has botched a procedure and you now have a 1-inch penis.
That's not something you want to wake up to.
No, on a scale of 1 to 100, how miserable would that make you?
Unless you were half an inch.
There's a sliver of people that might work out well for and be an enhancement. but you're gonna be. I think it's up there, if not worse than waking up in a bath full of ice and someone's nicked your kidney.
Well, I mean, you've got another kidney.
This is true. You do have two. If someone's going to go to the effort of cutting out one of your kidneys, they're going to take both of your kidneys, though. Mm. I don't think they're not going to go, oh, I'll leave him one.
Just to keep him breathing and alive.
Oh, my God. They killed Kenny. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Look, the other one, and it's just hit on Netflix, is season 3 of Magic for Humans, which is magic for adults, it should really be called. It's not. There's some stuff on there that kids will be impressed by, but then he'll go on segments just ripping up stuff that you were told as a child. It got really awkward once I was watching an episode about Christmas and Shay was in the room and then he started ripping into the concept of Santa Claus and then it was, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm watching that one.
Yep.
Okay.
But he does really fun stunt tricks. Some of it is gimmick play and stuff. Some of it is mentalism and this sort of stuff, but it's very little of it is actual camera trickery. So most of what he's doing is actually happening in real life before people's eyes. It's not stuff that's enhanced afterwards. And I really appreciate that because there's another magic show on at the moment called Magic Caught on Camera, which is meant to be like a not hidden camera, but it's, these are magicians from all around the world and their friends are filming them in the street. And I'm going to call bollocks to it right now because there's a guy in there named Jabrizi and he's already a bit cheeky. But at one section, he does some magic for a girl and a woman in the street and her mind is blown. And that woman is his ex-girlfriend and she used to be his camera operator.
Okay.
So it's like, ooh, that's a bit cheeky.
Were they just expecting nobody to remember or know him?
I've known this guy. He was on Penn & Teller's Fool Us many years ago, and his stuff was pretty good. And I've checked it out, and some of his stuff is pretty good. But if you're gonna be on national television, don't have your assistant be the surprised tourist. To the general public watching, it's not a big deal. But to any other magician friends that might have seen his stuff, what do you call it? Is that astroturfing? You know, making the wicket greener for play than it actually is?
Right. That's great sporting analogy. Anybody know cricket?
That's not cricket.
There we go. That's not cricket. That's enough stuff, surely, of new things that have come back. I'm tired from watching all this unscripted stuff.
Yeah, it's nice to have a story. That's for sure. What have you guys been watching apart from The Last Stand?
We've been watching a lot of, Netflix because it's at our disposal. We are kind of the unofficial La Casa de Papel Money Heist podcast. So we will definitely recommend that. Also, if we're being international, Itaewon is a South Korean TV show on Netflix. From what I understand, Itaewon is kind of like Seoul, like an international sort of city, a transient sort of city in South Korea. So it kind of covers a lot of classism, privilege, being a foreigner in Korea because it's such a homogenous sort of country. And also the rise of hard work and, trying to build an empire. So that was quite an interesting show.
What's it called again?
Itaewon Class.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I'll have to check that one out. Yeah. I finished off High Fidelity, the TV show. That was pretty good. It was good fun. I think I said last week, Tom, it took me a few episodes to get into and I didn't know why because it would be exactly the sort of thing I liked. But then, as it progressed, I got more invested in it and they did a little swerve at the end, which I quite enjoyed. I was quite happy with that. Also finished Afterlife. Have you guys been watching Afterlife?
Oh, yes. It is very rare that we cry in general, unless we like it. But it is very rare that we cry every episode. And Afterlife did that in season one, and it definitely did it in season two. OT will always talk about how he wasn't necessarily that quintessential sort of Ricky Gervais fan. I would say Afterlife is something that everyone can enjoy whether you are or not. I think a lot of the time you have shows that address grief in a way that will become way too lighthearted that you're not necessarily delving into the deep. What I really appreciate about Ricky Gervais and Afterlife is he lets you sit in those uncomfortable moments. And sometimes it's okay not to be okay when you're going through that stuff, but also understanding that those that love you also aren't doing okay. Mm. But it's also very funny as well.
It's amazing that he and they have been able to get all of those aspects and put them all in something where it feels really balanced, even though I must say that last episode, I saw it coming, but still killed me. I had to watch a Parks and Rec episode afterwards to recover. I wasn't sure how the second season was going to go because the first season felt beautiful. You know, it was a story in itself. And then it was almost like, are they going to open up the wounds again? But no, it just showed that grief can continue and you can, it's a wave. It comes and goes, it gets better, it gets worse. And you may not always get over something within, you know, 6 or 8 episodes. And we did see at the end of season two that season three was announced, which is really good.
Does that, I guess just a little question, kind of like with Bad Boys for Life as well, because they had that announcement. Does that kind of take away from the enjoyment you might have if you know before you watch it that it's going to come back again?
That's a good question. For me, it enhances.
Okay.
I come from a background. I've read comic books all my life. I'm all about interconnected stories, and I love when properties connect together, done in the right way. And so I like long form storytelling. And quite often, if I find out something I'm about to start is only one season, if it was intended to be one season, cool. But if someone's to say, oh, look, the ending isn't quite a proper ending, I don't know if I'll even dive in. That's how shallow I am.
I'm kind of thinking about Big Little Lies. Mm-hmm. I think I would have been upset if I got to the end of the first season and found out that there was going to be a second one, because the first season felt
complete.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, and also after watching the second season of Big Little Lies, I realized I didn't really need it.
See, you do the hard graft, Leo, because we didn't for that reason. We didn't
want it. Yeah, right.
We were just content with the first season and we're like, yeah, let's remember it for what it was.
I think you guys finished at the right time. It didn't need a second one at all.
I think you guys all watch more premium content, and that's that. I think you have more of an expectation from the storytelling, the more premium a product looks and this sort of stuff, that you will expect an ending.
That's true.
You know, I watch a lot of trash that's on major network stuff that they're just throwing out there really to get advertisers to spend money. They don't care about the payoff. You get a rare exception, like, Lost got an ending. Not everyone likes the ending, but it got an ending. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I come from an era where shows would end and they didn't get the ending they really wanted. And then sometimes you get a show like Heroes, which ended probably two seasons after where it should have. But then they came back for another 10 episodes 6 years later or something like that, and they should not have done that.
Yeah, completely unnecessary.
Yeah, or like that Prison Break.
I was about to add Prison Break to the list too.
I had a real champ suggest watching that one, and I got through 4 episodes and just went, nah.
4?
Oh, wow, you're braver than us.
Look, I love Dominic Purcell and Wentworth Miller. They were great on Prison Break. They were fantastic on Legends of Tomorrow together. So I was happy to go and see them back together. But just, oh boy, that was not a good show.
Once the first season finished and I think it was the first season they got out, I was like, okay, they're out. They're broken. I'm finished. Don't need to watch it anymore.
Look, there were some fun moments that happened in the seasons to follow. And then there was a, what was it called? I think it was called Breakout Kings. There was a spin-off series.
Ooh, you like that,
which I quite enjoyed, to be honest.
Me too. He had a real good cast. I think, what's his name? Alfonso, who was in Fast and Furious 4. He's in that. And Dominic, what's his name? The guy that plays every Bronx New Yorker shaved head. Hey, you fucking wise guy. Ever.
That was a good laugh.
That was a good show. I was disappointed that didn't get more. I would have stuck with that.
Maybe they can start writing some more now.
Bring that back. Don't bring back Prison Break.
Prison Break. Have you guys watched anything else, or should we crack into a quiz?
Look, I watched one other thing that I'll plug. Animated DC movie. These are always very hit and miss. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're pretty ordinary. One that was really good from 2 years ago was Justice League Dark. That was following John Constantine, Swamp Thing, Etrigan the Demon, a whole bunch of the magical, mystical, creepy, haunted characters basically from DC. It fit within the established DC animated universe very nicely. A sequel has come out recently called Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. And this is kind of like the DC animated version of Avengers Endgame, in that things go really poorly for everyone the whole time.
Mm.
I didn't realize that this is what they were doing. And I checked afterwards. This is kind of the end of the animated DC universe. And I didn't think I wanted to see all these heroes that I've watched for the best part of 15 years in animated shows die gruesomely. Turns out there's some sick enjoyment to be had there of, like, the Teen Titans have a really rough go, and Martian Manhunter, his weakness is flame. So clearly being attacked by a planet made of flame is a bad thing. And
You've got to stay clear of those.
Because at the back of your mind, you somehow know they're not really dead. Something will happen that will just bring them back.
Like a hand from the grave?
Yeah. Look, the fact that it's all the magical characters that are left means that it feels very Doctor Strange-y of, okay, they can turn back things, and I'm not going to say what does happen because not everything works out at the end. And it's kind of like how Endgame rebooted the Marvel Universe for moving forward with some changes that they want and that sort of stuff. This is what they've achieved with this.
Mm.
But, like, this is like a cartoon version of what Zack Snyder was trying to do.
Yeah, right.
It's depressing. It's good. But
is this the Zack Snyder cut that everyone wanted?
Kind of. They kind of, like, really lent into it, and people get punked.
Well, Ashton Kutcher turns up.
No, I just mean, like, people that should be awesome fighters are just up against way too stronger odds and go down hard.
Mm.
Yeah. Damn. Anyway, there was a nice balance to watching Lego Masters and all this happy stuff to watch a cartoon full of death.
You got to have a bit of everything. Have you guys watched anything else, or have we...
OT watches The Good Fight. I never watched Good. Is it The Good Wife?
The Good Wife, yeah.
But obviously, in a shared sort of communal space, I would slowly watch what he's watching, and I got obsessed with Good Fight. So now it's our show. Sorry, OT, but it's our show.
So now he has to wait for when you can watch it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I've heard really good things about this. Can you give me the 30-second elevator pitch?
Oh, if you loved, or even just enjoyed watching The Good Wife, this show is for you, because it goes above and beyond. It sort of covers current topics, political topics and whatnot. It might not be to your flavor, depending on which side of you're leaning towards, but it's really brilliant. It just does it so tastefully, in my opinion. And the characters, the actors, they're just perfect and amazing. And it feels like what Good Wife needed to be, and they sort of just gone there and done that the way it was meant to be in the first place, if you know what I mean.
Cool.
How many seasons are there of it?
I think this is the third season.
Oh, wow.
So it's been there for a while.
Yeah. I have heard that it's just as good if you watch A Good Wife, that you're mad not to continue and watch A Good Fight. But to me, it feels like it's really super new, but obviously not.
It's campy. It has some very campy sort of elements. Things that I wouldn't expect in a legal procedural, well, not procedural, but like a legal sort of show. They have some very campy elements in it.
So is it kind of like Suits, or is it like that style of show, or what? Like when you say campy legal, my mind goes to like Legally Blonde, not Legally Blonde. What's the one with Ally McBeal?
Ally McBeal is great. No, it's not. It's not Ally McBeal.
Sorry, I got really confused then when you said campy, but it's like, it's serious stuff, right?
Yeah, but they somehow find like a meta play where they kind of make caricatures of the characters. I think OT knows more about it than I do, but I enjoyed the fanfare.
Yeah, like it's the Guru of Meat community. Like it's hilarious.
Oh, wow.
I'd go there.
What a sound.
Well, that's the elevator pitch right there.
I'm very into Community.
Mm. Cool, cool, cool.
Let's get into this here quiz. This one was sent Gary sent this quiz. He emailed thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com. He said, I've had this quiz in mind for a while, but I've had to think about the content. Anyway, I had a brainwave today, so I thought I'd finally write this up for you. I call it G'day Tiger. So basically, you have to tell me what big cat, or if, what sort of big cat, I should say. You don't need to know the name or whatever. Character's name. Just what sort of big cat, is it a panther or a lion or whatever, appeared in these movies? Narnia.
Lion.
Lion.
Aslan.
Nice. The Life of Pi, or just Life of Pi.
A tiger?
Sumatran?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep, you got it. Spot on. I'd forgotten that I loved his name. His name is Richard Parker. You know, perfect name for a tiger. Aladdin.
That's a Bengal tiger.
Anybody care to pull the character's name? I can't remember.
Sharky?
Sharky the tiger.
S-H-A-K-I?
Isn't it Raja?
Raja.
I think. Close enough.
Yeah, Raja sounds so vaguely familiar.
All right. Madagascar.
Oh. A lion, yeah.
Who plays the lion?
Ben Stiller.
Schillinger, what's his name? J.K. Simmons.
There are a few in Madagascar. So I was happy if you were going to get lion or Ben Stiller. Ice Age.
The saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few of them over the movies. And finally, the last one, Winnie the Pooh.
Tigger.
Oh.
And we can't give him a species because there's only one.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
He's a non-conforming cat species.
Or evolutionary dead end.
Oh,
poor bouncing, tigger. Not that helpful, apparently.
Oh, no.
Oh, there's not that many things in nature that bounce all the time.
Well, except for the kangaroo and wallaby.
Oh, they do a lot of hopping.
I guess technically it's more a hop than a bounce. You're right. You're right.
I'm talking pogo, up and down. That's useless. That's just for ADD kids.
If you want a good laugh, find Pogo compilation fails. They're very ouchy.
Well, it's funny you say that. There was the world's most expensive Pogo on Most Expensivest.
How much was it?
$37,000.
What was it made of?
Dreams. It was owned by the guy who's like the number one, like the Ken Block of pogo stick videos, like the dude that does Gymkhana, or you know, he does extreme parkour pogo.
Okay, yep, guys, he's known for his pogoing.
I like that we live in a world where that's a thing. That someone thought, you know what? I could bounce high on a pogo stick, but can I bounce between two rooftops?
It's almost like a Darwin Award thing. Almost. He's either going to make it in that category or make it in that category.
But that dude dared to dream. He's the Michael Jordan of
of the pogo stick world.
On the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, you're spot on. Well, well done, everybody, with that quiz. You did very well, even though before we started recording, there was a little bit of nerves about it, and I said, you'll be fine, and guess who ended up answering most of them? Katie.
Oh, Leah.
You did very well.
Thank you.
You all did very well. And thank you so much for coming on. That was lots of fun. When's this week's podcast coming out for you guys?
Well, we're recording on Tuesday evening and it's dropping on Tuesday evening.
Holy cow, we've taken up your editing time.
No, that's, you know, we need to learn more from you guys, but we used to think we had a schedule, but sometimes we'll decide that we don't want that episode to come out and we want to re-record again. And I think that's just how we live our life on the edge. That's 2020 living.
Absolutely.
We're 130 episodes deep, so we now record on a Tuesday morning and put it out on a Thursday morning. For that exact reason.
Gives us time.
There have been times that I've expressed views that upon reflection I've decided against.
OT is our grand master editor, so it's always fun to see what he keeps in of things I say and what he takes out.
Oh, what percentage is kept in?
Oh, pretty much almost everything. There's just a few things that she goes beyond the line. I'm like, nah. Got to reel her back in.
That's for the uncut episode, right? The bloopers.
Yep.
The After Dark episode. Well, all right. So people need to subscribe, obviously, to the podcast, but you're on all the social media platforms as well, yeah?
Just not Facebook. That's not a reflection of how active we are. Let's just say that.
Fair enough. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming on once again.
Thank you so much for having us. We really enjoyed it.
Tom, what do you reckon? Carryover champions? We'll ask them back again, right?
Oh, for sure.
Whether they like it or not.
That's the very best kind.
Tom, thank you.
Snuggins.